Good afternoon. This crowd is a sign of three things. One is we do have some devoted followers. The second is that increasingly CSIS, and particularly the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group, is coming to rely upon the webcast version of our events as a way of reaching our audience. There's always a little interesting risk there. In fact, part of our internal debate is we don't actually want to let people know we're going to webcast it, because then they'll just stay in the comfort of their own offices and watch on the web. We actually think that's a plus, not a minus, and so we let that be known, and we're going to continue to work on enhancing that technology and that capability, because it actually lets us reach worldwide, not just here in Washington, D.C. The third, of course, is the beauty of the weather. And if there was any good day to stay in your office and not come downtown, this might come close to it. Although we have had events here on the eve of blizzards. We have had events where the temperature in this room was 130 degrees. So we've pretty much covered the range of options, if you will. And you guys are always a dedicated audience here. I want to welcome you, both the folks in the room and the folks on the web, to the annual event in which CSIS rolls out its Defense Contract Trends Report. I'm David Berto. I'm the director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group. With me on the podium here today is Guy Benari, who is my deputy, and Greg Sanders, who is the brains and the guiding process behind the analysis that we do in these reports and that we lay out for you. I want to remind you in the rooms, please silence your cell phones and other devices. On the web, you can make whatever noise you want, because that's another incentive, I guess, at the other end. So, and at the end, when we take questions, I'll give you now, you can email Greg Sanders, gsanders@csis.org. So if you're watching on the web and you want to send in questions, you'll be able to get them to Greg, and the team here will be able to answer them. We're here today to release our report. This is the latest in a series, U.S. Department of Defense Contract Spending and the Supporting Industrial Base. The view graphs that we'll be showing here, for the most part, are charts in and figures in the report. For those of you following on the web, you can actually download the view graphs in a separate link on the website and follow along. We'll give you the chart number as we go through them. For those of you in the room, we'll give you the page number in the report when we have the chart up on the screen, so that you can follow along as well and use that to take notes. Both the charts and the report will be available by web from here on out. And occasionally, we actually even put out updated versions, usually when we find that we were not as smart as we thought we were when we put the report together. The history of this is actually pretty important. This is our eighth year now doing this kind of analysis. It began from our initial effort to look at government-wide federal services contracts, because it was really an unexplored area back in the mid-aughts that not a lot of people were paying a lot of analytical attention to. Enormous growth, as you'll see in these charts, for DOD and for the rest of the federal government in services contracts. And so we began to put out an annual report on government-wide services contracts. A couple of years ago, we decided to expand that effort and start looking at individual agencies. Obviously, we start with DOD because that's two-thirds of the federal government contract expenditures. But we also expanded to look at not only services, but products. That gets us into looking at R&D as well, and we look at R&D more as an investment than as a service. The data we use for these reports classifies R&D as a service rather than as a product, so we break it out into three categories, and you'll see that in the report here. It's also becoming increasingly relevant, particularly with the emerging budget situation across not only DOD but the rest of the federal government. The future of contracts is a bit cloudy. The future of the industrial base itself is in question in terms of whether or not the business will be there to sustain it, and whether or not the agencies themselves are even paying attention to the broader issues associated with the industrial base, either for across the federal government or for defense in particular. Finally, one of the reasons we do this is we draw our analysis from public data. We find that while that public data exists, it's not easy to get at, it's not easy to evaluate. You need to know what the public data are saying about you, regardless of whether you're from a government, whether you're from a company or whether you're just from an interested third party who's looking at what the data are saying. So this is these are all the reasons why we go forward here. We released about 6 weeks ago our first report on the State Department and the Agency for International Development contract trends. We have coming out in probably about 3 or 4 weeks our report, our annual report on the Department of Homeland Security, and we expect over the next year to expand to the other agencies that have significant contract work, Energy Department, NASA, and possibly the General Services Administration, if they're still around by then. So you can download the slides. You can follow along in the text as well. Guy?
Yes. Let's just see if this works. Yep, it does. So some of you have probably seen these caveats, if you will, or explanations of our methodology before. We try to say a few words about it before every one of our report releases, because it's very important to understand what the data can and cannot do for you and what we'll be showing you today. So we use the Federal Procurement Data System as our primary source of data for this report. We augment the data from some other sources, but primarily it's this source. Many of you are probably familiar with this database. It includes all government, federal government contracts, prime contracts, unclassified prime contracts. There's several caveats here, as you'll notice, that are worth $2,500 or more. So that's quite a significant amount of data every year, and there's about 100 or so, over 100 columns for each year's worth of data and for each contract action's worth of data. And so just getting sort of our heads around this, as David said, was a learning curve that took several years. We think we're at a place now where we're not only good but able to expand on the data that we present every year, and you'll see that this report, compared to some of our previous year's reports, has some new things and new ways of cutting the data. Of course, this could be a 400-page report easily if we cut it as many times as we want to and thought there was an interest in, but we try to limit it to what you have in your hands today. But speaking of previous year's reports, if you do compare numbers across our earlier publications and this one, there will be differences. This is primarily because each report we put out will show the dollar values in that most recent full year's constant dollars. So the report we're rolling out today has fiscal year 2011 constant dollars, or 2011 constant dollars as the dollar value for all charts. And the other reason the numbers will be different is that FPDS changes and corrects itself going back several years, sometimes a decade or more. And so the data are constantly changing, and each report will show the most recent data going back as far back as we can. The other important thing to note here is that we don't have the ability to break out supplementals, and we don't have the ability to show subcontracts. So again, FPDS will show us just unclassified prime contracts, all the data that we show, all the dates, all the years, are fiscal years as opposed to calendar years. Again, that's how the government does its budgeting, and that's how we track it as well.
I neglected at the beginning also to thank some of the others to whom we owe a lot in terms of this report, in addition to Guy, who's my co-director of the project that produced this, and Greg Sanders, who's one of the primary authors. I also want to thank Jesse Ellman and David Morrow. They're here with us today. They were significant authors in this as well. There's no way we could have put this report together without them. We have a number of contributors, Roy Levy, Josh Matthew, Andy Dotstan, and other research assistants and interns that we've had. Some of these folks actually start working on it. It takes us longer to finish the project than they stick around for. So we actually owe thanks to folks who weren't on the final report as well. We also owe a special thanks to the Department of Defense. Last year, we took the initiative to take our DHS data over to the Chief Procurement Officer of DHS and walk them through our data before we released our report. We were a little reluctant to do that with DOD, both because it's pretty complicated and because we felt kind of vulnerable. But that was then turned out a misguided thought, and we did sit down. We spent several hours with the Defense Department folks who both certify identify the Federal Procurement Data System as the repository of the public record, and who in fact manage and track their own internal data. And while we have some inconsistencies, not surprising because we break our data down differently than they do, by and large, we can track across the board. We'll talk, for instance, on one of those inconsistencies when we're on the competition chart. We'll talk another one when we're looking at size of business and particularly small businesses. We have our own counting rules that we follow. They're different than the government's, but we can actually track pretty well. That's encouraging because what it says is the agency's own internal data actually match, which are much more refined, and they've got a much greater ability to see into specific contracts than we do from the public data, are in fact trackable and translatable to the public data that we see. Any of you who have dealt with the Federal Procurement Data System, either as a government employee or as a contractor trying to figure out what it says about you, know that that system is still replete with problems. And fundamentally, there are 700,000 contract actions being entered by individuals, none of whom have the incentive to be perfect because they're pretty sure the other 699,999 may not be, right? And so the system itself has some inherent challenges in it. But I think we've seen over the years it continues to get better. The administration is actually using the Federal Procurement Data System for management tracking purposes. The agencies are, in fact, reporting on it. We're seeing increased signs that the agencies themselves are paying much greater attention, particularly to the big topics and the big issues that pop up. Some of the agencies actually have daily checks of yesterday's entries to make sure they're accurate. This is very heartening. It's both better, obviously, for groups like us that try to use the data and analyze the trends, but it's also better for the government itself to have better tracking and better data, and it's better for those who live off of that. Let me go to the next chart, see if I can figure out how to do this. This is, in fact, chart 3, and it's page 5 in your text. This is top-line DOD contract spending. There are three data elements on this chart. The bottom bar is each year the amount of obligations from that year's that fiscal year on contracts. And you can see from the dark brown that, again, using FY11 constant dollars, that amount has essentially doubled since the mid-90s. And most of that is post-9/11, obviously. The lighter colored bar, top part of the bar, is outlays not on contracts. For DOD, this is essentially civilian personnel and military personnel and associated benefits that are not used for contracts, if you will. It's very interesting to us that if you go back to 1990 and look at the constant dollar value of non-contract outlays in DOD in FY90, it's almost identical to the value of non-contract outlays in DOD in FY11. Now, it went down a lot during the 90s, came back up in the aughts, but it's essentially the same. So contract dollars has doubled, and non-contract outlays is pretty stable from the end of the Cold War until now the end of the post-9/11 period. We obviously need a much more elegant definition for the time that we're in as the end of the post-9/11 period, but we're still trying to figure that out. Sequestration friendly is not quite the topic, the term I'm looking for here. The third data element here is, in fact, the line. And that line is the percent of total DOD spending that goes to contracts. And you can see it was down around 30% back at the end of the Cold War, climbed dramatically right after the introduction of FARA and FASA, the acquisition reforms in the early 90s, and the creation of a lot more individual development order contracts and task order contracts, increased again as a percentage basis a few years after 9/11. There was a little bit of a lag time. It's dropped a bit since the 2008 peak, stabilized in FY11 compared to 10 at about 55% of the total DOD budget. We can't exactly project going forward, but if you look at the FY13 and beyond impact of the first tranche of Budget Control Act cuts, that is the $487 billion that DOD took out of the FY12 FYDP and beyond, 45% of those cuts were in procurement and R&D. Procurement R&D is only 25% of the budget. Almost all of procurement R&D spending is under contract. We can expect a continued decline in both the contract dollar numbers and the contract percentage of total DOD spending, but we may not see that until FY13 actually shows up. And of course, that projection is clouded by sequestration or whatever the reductions are that's part of the deal that gets sequestration off the table. So it's not really useful to use this as a projection, but the recent trends do show some indications in that regard. Let's go now to chart 4, which is not in your book.
This is really just the outline of today's presentation, but it's also really the outline of the book itself or the report itself. This is how we've structured it. We'll start by talking you through the overall trends in DoD contract obligations. The first few charts are essentially breaking down that lower dark brown bar in the previous chart into the three areas that David mentioned initially. So products, services, and R&D will be analyzed separately. We'll then look at the contract obligations by DoD component, so the three military services, Army, Navy, and Air Force, and then we look at the civilian component as well, which we call other DoD, and we'll break that down into its key components there as well. This will be the first time that we've done that in any of our reports here. We'll then look at the three, what we consider to be three key contract characteristics. We'll look at degree of competition in contracting. We'll look at the types of funding mechanisms used, and we'll look at the different types of contract vehicles. And then the last section of the report and this presentation looks at the industrial base that supports DoD and provides the services, products, and R&D. And the two sort of ways that we break out the industrial base are at the bottom there of the slide. We look at the top 20 companies overall and for each of the areas, again, products, services, R&D. And we look at the breakdown of the market share by dollars across the large, medium, and small companies to see what the dynamics are in the market on the industrial base side.
And of course, the final structure is the question and answer period at the end. It's not included in our report, but we're looking forward to your questions at the back end. The next chart, this is chart 5, it's page 6 in your text, is this total DoD contract obligations for products. I won't spend a lot of time on it. In fact, we'll zip through a number of these charts because the data are fairly self-explanatory and we want to focus on some of the more complex ones. Obviously, a huge increase in the aughts, reaching a peak in 08. A bit of a downturn in 9 and 10. Last year we had an uptick. We'll see when we get both to the service-specific charts that the majority of that uptick in FY11 is Navy, and we'll spend a little time on it at that point. Chart 6.
Here we're looking at the same trends, but for services. Again, the bars at the bottom represent the obligated dollars for each year, and the line at the top represents the share of total obligations for services alone. And you can see that, again, there's been a sharp uptick sort of following 9/11 and the initiation of operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. But overall, you see that the share of services, especially in the last decade or two, has been relatively steady at about 45%. Next chart, again, the same for R&D. Just note, please, that the scale on the left-hand y-axis is different. We just didn't want it to be too much of an eye chart because R&D is such a smaller share of the overall obligations compared to products and services. And bear in mind, again, because FPDS only requires reporting for unclassified contracts, we believe that the majority of classified contracts that don't show up are actually in this, would actually have been in this chart in the R&D. There's a lot of black programs that aren't reported into FPDS, and probably a significant amount of the dollars are categorized as R&D dollars. We know that overall DoD spends about 70, 80 billion a year on R&D. Some of that is in-house in the DoD labs. And then a significant part of that, again, is probably classified and doesn't show up here. So about half of the overall DoD, or slightly less than half of the overall DoD spending on R&D doesn't really get captured in FPDS.
I would note, though, that what analysis we have been able to do of classified contracts indicates to us that the patterns are about the same, and with the exception of the component distribution where the Air Force has a disproportionate share, the vendors are probably roughly the same,
right,
as well between R&D classified and unclassified,
right,
reports.
One other quick point to make here on this chart is you'll see the downturn in the line at the bottom, or the downward trend in the line. That's the share of R&D, defense R&D of the total obligated R&D defense dollars. And really, this is contrary. You can't see the earlier years. This only goes back to 1990, but this is contrary to trends that we've seen in previous buildups. And when we've had periods of increases in defense spending in the past, that's usually been accompanied by periods of increases in defense R&D spending. Whereas in this last buildup in the sort of 2002-2008 timeframe, the share of R&D has actually been decreasing and the overall dollars have been relatively steady. And this chart really just shows you the sort of all the other previous lines on the same page. You see again the sort of that overall, while the share of services has been going up. That's the purple chart there in the middle. It's not really overtaken products except for during the late 90s for a short period of time. And you can see the at the bottom there the decrease in the share of R&D spending as compared to the products and services.
Chart nine, which is page 10 in your text. This is the total contract obligations by component now. We'll spend the next few charts looking at the components. The green is the Army at the bottom. The dark blue is the Navy in the middle. The light blue is the Air Force. And the top is other. Other includes defense agencies. It also includes U.S. Special Operations Command. Includes a lot of TRICARE and healthcare joint expenditures, if you will. One of the big chunks of growth, and we'll spend a little time on this later, is fuel, which is the largest growth in products for the category of other. You can see the trends post 9/11 and then in the recent four years as the downturn here. Let's look in turn at product services and R&D by component. Next chart is chart 10, page 11. These are products by component. Again, you can see a similar trend. You can actually see that the share of other in products is a lot. That is a lot of that is fuel and Missile Defense Agency. Although much of the MDA spending in the early part was R&D, and doesn't count as products in this category as well. Again, you see the blue bump of the Navy. A big significant increase between FY11 and FY10. That's fixed wing aircraft, rotary wing aircraft, the expansion of a submarine contract from 1.5 a year to 2, and the signing of both DDG and particularly the LCS contract awards and obligations in FY11. We don't expect that increase to continue into FY12. We do expect the number to be roughly the same for FY12. Now, chart 11, page 12.
Looking at services by component, again, similar picture to what we saw with products, with a really sharp increase as operations in Iraq and Afghanistan get underway, especially for the Army, but for the other services as well. What's interesting to note here is that in the last three years or so, it's starting to come down. And again, that's true for all the services. Where it's not true is in the other category, and as David mentioned, a big part of that is the TRICARE Management Agency that's seeing a continued rise in its contract obligations, and we'll talk a little more about that a little later on. Next chart, number 12. Again, same trends or same breakdown by component, but for R&D this time. Again, the scale on the left-hand y-axis is different, just so we can capture it nicely on one slide. But here, the sort of story of operations in Iraq and Afghanistan isn't as evident. For Army, the trends have been pretty steady, and for as they have been for the Air Force as well. And Navy, in the last few years, has seen significant cuts in defense R&D spending. Other category pretty constant at about $5-6 billion a year for the last decade or two.
Some of that Navy change, of course, is a gradual migration of both F-35 and DDG-1000 from right. R&D into procurement.
Next chart, number 13. We look at both the total dollars spent by each of the components, and this is on everything, so product, services, and R&D. And we look at the share of that service of the overall DoD contract obligations. And so for Army, again, the story is pretty familiar by now. Sharp increase starting in 2002, starting to come down again pretty sharply around 2008. And that's true for both the overall dollars and for the share of the overall DoD spending.
And again, projecting the cuts from the initial BCA reductions, Army did take a disproportionately large share of overall reductions. We do expect that to start showing up in contract dollars in 12 and in 13 particularly.
Navy, I'll zip through these first few next few charts a little faster. We're on chart 14 showing Navy contract obligations, again, overall and by share of total DoD. The interesting story, I think, here is the in the line in the last year, the uptick, pretty significant uptick. We sort of drill down a little bit to see where that's coming from, and that's primarily in products and specifically in, I think we saw submarines and LCS were the two product categories that saw a significant increase. We probably don't expect that to continue.
One could say that the Navy was anticipating the pivot to Asia here, but I actually don't think that's accurate.
And then, right, number 15 is Air Force. What's interesting here is if you look at the chart, the line at the top of the chart, the downturn consistently over the last decade and more, really the Air Force's share has been dropping quite significantly, and we'll see that in the next chart when we compare it, in the two charts from now. Let's take it to the next chart, and this is the other DoD components or the civilian components. Again, story of Iraq and Afghanistan very evident here, sharp uptick in 02, 03, driven by both products and services, and the share of overall DoD spending also going up.
One of my favorite charts, chart 17 in your slide deck, page 18 in your text. This actually combines the four previous charts together into one, so you can see the relative proportionate shares of the three services and the other DoD. The reason this is one of my favorite charts, of course, is back in fiscal year 08, in an unprecedented event, the category of other surpassed the Air Force as the third largest contract obligation section of the Defense Department. Nobody knew it at the time. In fact, nobody knew it until a year and a half later when we ran the data. That trend, however, has maintained. Obviously, if you could include classified contracts, the Air Force would be a higher number, but there are sufficient classified contracts in the category of other that the category of other, we believe, would still stay slightly ahead of the Air Force. Now, that's not really an event worth noting, except that it does show a pretty significant change in the basic structure of DoD and in the contracting and customer arrangements going forward, particularly if you took out of the Air Force that non-blue portion of Air Force expenditures on products and R&D, that is the sort of, you know, satellites and things that are really global in nature or at least DoD-wide in nature. It really shows a pretty dramatic shift and one that we actually don't see changing a whole lot going forward in the future. The next chart now, we're going to look service by service for the three categories. This really is the same data portrayed differently. You can see that for the Army, and this is page 22 in your text, chart 18, you can see that for the Army, the products portion went up, has come back down. Services is still a larger part of total contract obligations for the Army than products, and R&D is a disproportionately small share. For the Navy, products is a larger share. Services is fairly steady. R&D is fairly steady over the last 4 years. Page 24 in your text, chart 20. Air Force, again, surprising, actually. Services is a large part, and notwithstanding the fact that the Air Force, for example, still classifies as a product contract, the C-17 support contract, because the C-17 is an airplane, not a service, in their minds. And so I think, actually, if you had more accurate reporting of the categories, services would be a larger share of Air Force contract obligations and products, and even smaller share. Now we'll look at other.
Other, again, sort of primarily driven by operations in Iraq and Afghanistan starting in 2002-03. So we've seen a significant rise in both products and service categories, not so much in R&D, but please note that the one category, you've got sort of three-year CAGRs at the bottom of the screens for each of these charts. They're kind of hard to read on the screen, but you'll see them in the report. Look at the increase in service contracting for the civilian DoD components. Again, you'll see that in the next slide as well when we break it down. Here we are. Chart 22. This really shows you the comparison of the military services to other DoD at the bottom. And initially, we break down other DoD into DLA, Defense Logistics Agency. That's at the bottom left-hand side of your charts, and is sort of the remaining civilian agencies on the in the red down at the bottom middle over there. But where it really gets interesting is chart 23, page 27 in your report. Here we break out the remaining civilian agencies in DoD, and here's where you can really see on the top left-hand side the TRICARE Management Agency and the sharp increases there as a result of increases in contracting for health care and health services. The other elements you see there are SOCOM. You see at the bottom left-hand side the Missile Defense Agency, DISA, and in other, just two quick comments there, the uptick in the early sort of 90s is primarily the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that was folded into the Army reporting and so goes away at some point in the sort of late 90s or mid-90s. The large bars on the right-hand side of that chart is Transcom, which is, as of a few years ago, its own reporting agency and FPDS. And so that's the result for the reason for the uptick in the last few years there.
This next chart is not in your text. There's probably no more carefully tracked statistic or percentage in government contracting than the percent of contracts and dollars that are competed. And there are lots of different ways in which you can sort and analyze competition data. What we do here, just to explain to you kind of how we do it, is the left-hand side are the 10 categories inside the federal procurement data system of types of competition, if you will. Way too confusing. In fact, I think our initial report actually had all 10 of these, and we didn't even know, at least I didn't understand what our own data said. I'm pretty sure my team did. So what we've broken it down, and this is the methodology, to the right-hand side is basically four categories. One is competitively solicited with multiple offers. That to us is real competition. The second is competition, competitive solicitation, but only a single offer. And there's 1,000 reasons why you could only have a single offer. Obviously, it could be that you got caught by surprise. It could be that you knew you were only going to get one offer, but you wanted to have countless competition. It could be that along the way, Company A bought Company B, and you ended up without competition. And there's a lot of other reasons. The third category is a category called no competition. The fourth category we call unlabeled. What would fall in unlabeled? They left it blank. They put it was competitively solicited and awarded, but there were no bids. We find that somewhat counterintuitive and assume somebody screwed up in the data entry along the way. So that's a category, and luckily you'll see that's gone down quite a bit. Chart 25, page 29 in your text, lists the FPDS, DOD, total contract obligations by competition. We don't break down for our report the individual statistics for product, services, and R&D, or by Army, Navy, Air Force. We do have that data, and one of the things that I should offer is, we're always eager to meet with individual groups and go through specific data to look at areas that are most of interest to you. So feel free to take advantage of that. It takes a while to get on the schedule, but we're happy to do that because it's nice to know that others are looking at our data. What you see from this chart, though, is that competition, which is essentially the green bar at the bottom, that's competition with multiple offers, and the red part of the bar in the middle, competition with single offers, is fairly stable. And in fact, the percentage of dollars and the total dollars, which are still not competed, is substantial. There is clearly additional opportunity remaining inside the DoD budget for competition. And the percentage of that that's actually follow-on to previously competed awards is really fairly small. I think the data continue to show us this. Our percentage is not dramatically different than DOD's own reports that go to Congress. We're only off by a couple percent, and we can track the difference. So it's pretty accurate data description, and I think shows a tremendous opportunity for additional competition with some work, because obviously the government has to do a better job at its end if it wants to compete more.
By the way, just maybe a quick methodological note on this. In most of the government publications on competition, they lump together our green and red categories here, our section of. So as far as, again, most of the government publications are concerned, if a contract was competed, then that checks the competition box. And there's no real breakdown of whether or not there were multiple offers or whether it was a single offer. It was competed, so there was competition. And so we feel that we add a little bit of granularity here in the way we break down these two categories.
Yeah, it's one thing to have intent to compete. It's another thing to have results be actual competition. We kind of tend to focus on results.
So this chart, again, it's not in the report. It just shows you for the second contract characteristic that we examine in this report, which is funding mechanism used, the way we sort of aggregate the multiple FPDS categories. There's 17 in this field, and we narrow them down into the five on the right-hand side of the charts here. So we've got fixed price, cost reimbursement, time and materials, combination, which is any contract that has a combination of any of the three above funding mechanism types, and unlabeled, again, is a combination of the three different categories on the left-hand side, bottom left-hand side there.
I should point out that actually there are combination contracts that are lumped in both the fixed price and the cost reimbursement as well. It's a judgment call. The guidance for FPDS data entry is it's a judgment call of the entering official. If 60% of the CLINs in contract value are fixed price, 40% of the CLINs in contract value are cost reimbursable, you can call it a fixed price contract for purposes of doing here. It's not broken down by contract line item number or by total obligation dollars broken out by contract line item number. It's the predominance of the contract category. So there's a limit to what you can tell in an individual year. But our assumption, and I think it's been validated when we look at individual DD-350s, is that the trend over time of the distribution between fixed price work and cost reimbursable work does tend to be reflected in these data.
So in the next chart, you see the actual breakdown of into those five different funding mechanism categories. The bottom section of each bar is the fixed price category, and you'll see that that's the predominant category across the last decade or two, and it's been pretty steady for the last 3 or 4 years as well in terms of growth in that type of funding mechanism. Above it in the red, you see the cost reimbursement funding mechanisms. They've increased quite significantly, an almost 5% CAGR over the last 3 years. The category that's significantly come down is time and materials, as DOD has tried to move away from those types of contract. And where we were happiest to see was the sharp decrease in the combination contracts. For us, those are contracts that should really have been categorized as either fixed priced or cost or time and materials. We don't think there was a significant shift away from combination contracts. It was more a matter of recoding the contracts properly. And so as a result of that decrease in the combination and in the unlabeled, which for us is also a measure of just how good the government is in entering its data into the federal procurement data system, as a result of those two top categories going down, actually fixed price, the share of fixed price of overall contracts has increased from about 60-61% a few years ago to about 65% in the last year or two.
And as you know, this is actually one of the policy objectives of the current administration. Back in March of 2009, the president put out a memorandum, says, I want to move more towards fixed-price contracts. One of the things you can see from data like this is occasionally there actually is a connection between policy guidance and ultimate execution. And we think that that's probably what you see in this case. The next chart's not in your text. It's chart 28. This basically is type of contract vehicle. It crosswalks you from the FPDS categories on the left to the CSIS categories on the right. Basically, definitive contracts, purchase order contracts, and then various type of multiple and single award delivery order and task order contracts. The data itself, page 33 in your text, chart 29, shows the dark blue at the bottom is definitive contracts. As a share, it's been relatively steady the last 4 years. The yellow, which is actually the single award delivery order contracts, and the orange, which is multiple award, slightly shrinking as we move away. I should note that there's about $4.7 billion in FY11 of GSA scheduled DOD expenditures that are not captured in our data, because in order to be in the DOD data, it's got to be both DOD money and DOD contracts. That $4.7 billion is probably distributed all inside the delivery order contracts. Let's turn now to the companies, themselves. This is page 35 in your text, chart 30. These are the top 20 contractors in 2001 and the top 20 contractors in 2011. You'll see some fair stability at the top of the charts. You'll see a lot of movement underneath. One of the things we do is we track these data by Dunn's code. And so as mergers and acquisitions occur, we migrate the data as the Dunn's codes migrate. And we'll come back to that actually when we talk about small business contracts, because we do that in the year of execution. We don't continue to track beyond that. So you'll see, for instance, and if we had on this chart 2010 as well as 2011, you would see Huntington Ingalls Industries didn't exist on the 2010 column. It is now number 9 in the 2011 column. On the products top 20, which is chart 31 and page 36 in your text, again, you'll see some constancy at the top across, although you will see that because of the split up of HII and Northrop Grumman, United Technologies has moved into fifth place in FY11 as a top. I need to remind you here, these are prime contract dollars. This is not what companies themselves reflect as revenue under DOD contracts, because they will obviously be making adjustments for prime versus sub, and in many cases will have dollars they pick up as subcontractors and dollars they lose as prime contractors. We can only track prime data. We look forward with glee to the day that we've got subcontract data that we can bring into this analysis, but we're not holding our breath, although there are some preliminary efforts underway.
So just one other methodological note maybe here. It affects the next few slides as well, but the other difference between FPDS, or the other key difference between FPDS and what we see in other reportings, is that they will occasionally classify a contract as a product or service contract in a way that is different from the way the company, for example, reports it, or the way it's reported in places like Bloomberg or other financial data sources. And so we even when we identify glaring errors in this classification, for example, David mentioned the C-17 logistics support contract, which in FPDS is classified as a product contract. Even when we identify these glaring errors, we don't change them. We don't touch the data in FPDS unless there's a very clear sort of a human error in the entry as opposed to in the classification or the reporting.
We do, however, let the government know what we found.
Right.
And 10 years later, they may fix it.
Right. So LogCap, a few years later, after we identified it as an R&D contract in FPDS, was properly categorized as a service contract.
They have services.
Yes. Now we'll look at the top 20 service contractors. A few interesting points on this chart. This is number 32 in your slide deck. You see the rise again in the healthcare services reflected in the industrial base, as well as in the spending that we saw in the previous charts. You see that while there was only one healthcare provider in 2001, there are now three. In 2011, there were TriWest Healthcare, HealthNet, and Humana is the third one. together, if taken together, they would probably be something like the sixth or seventh largest contractor overall, not just for services. That's about $10 billion worth of contracts just to those three companies. That's, again, a change that we're seeing in the last decade or so. You'll also see that while the share of the top five companies in services has remained pretty constant at about 13%, the share of the companies in places 6 to 20 has actually gone up significantly from 15% to some 23% in 2011. Lastly, also, we expect to see a continued change in this makeup of the top 20 here. You'll see some companies in the top five, for example, that have spun off their government services business or are in the process of spinning that off. And so we'll be showing up under different names in the coming years. Next chart is top 20 contractors for R&D. And again, remember that this is just unclassified R&D contract dollars. About $40 billion worth. But what's really interesting here is just the share of the top 20 of the out of the overall contract spending. It's about 75% in 2011. So 75% of R&D, unclassified R&D contract dollars going to just 20 companies. And the other interesting thing to note here is that I say companies, but it's really a combination of private sector, universities, and FFRDCs, something that we don't see in the previous charts for products and services, where it is really all private sector. For R&D, you've got at least five entities that are not private sector entities.
Now, page 40 in your text, chart 34, we're going to look for the last few charts about breakout by contractor size. And we have four categories. We've introduced a new category for this year's analysis. The bottom, the blue lines, is small business. And here we use the government's definition of small business. Of course, there are multiple definitions, but we track with what DOD reports. However, unlike the government, which continues to both permit small business set-asides for the first couple of years after a merger or an acquisition and continues to track those as small business set-aside dollars, the minute the DUNS code changes hands, we start tracking it with the size of the overall company. In other words, the logic of contract award being this is still a small business doesn't comport with our analysis of size of company. And so our small business dollars are a bit lower than what the government reports on its own. The top, the dark green, is the share of total contract obligations by just the big six companies. Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, Boeing, and BAE Systems. And the next, the light green, is all other large companies. We define large as total annual revenue from all sources, that is government and commercial, of $3 billion or more. And that leaves the middle group, the red, which is what we call medium-sized. That is smaller than bigger than small and smaller than the $3 billion and above. And we track the percentages over time. This shows it by contractor size. Page 41, chart 35, shows for products. Here you see a substantially larger share for large companies and for the dark green big six, and a smaller share for small business. Page 42, chart 38.
Same thing for services. You'll see actually that for services, it's easier to be a small or medium-sized company than it is in the other categories, certainly in products and certainly in, we'll see in a minute, in R&D. Medium-sized companies capture a much larger share of the market for when it comes to services compared to products and compared to R&D. And the small companies, of course, primarily through small business set-asides, are relatively steady in terms of the market share that they hold. Final chart in this deck, the small, medium, large breakdown for R&D. Here it's absolutely clear that to be successful, to capture significant market share in defense R&D, you need to be a large company, and ideally you're one of the big six companies. small and medium-sized companies play a very minor role in terms of market share here. This is the sort of the big companies' playing field, and majority of contract dollars go to six of those big companies.
We're going to open the floor and the web for questions. Unfortunately, in typical leader fashion, I'm going to have to leave for another event. So I'm going to turn the answering of the questions over to the people who know the answers anyway, which is Guy and Greg, and they'll handle it well. And you can, in addition to emailing me, you can email gsanders@csis.org, gsanders@csis.org.
We have mics in the back, so please raise your hands. We'll call on you. Please identify yourself and your affiliation, and we'll get started. Let's do ladies first. Kate. Sorry, Frank.
Thanks. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the significance of payroll and benefits reaching equilibrium with the contract spending. I saw that you noted that at the beginning of the report, but I wasn't sure what sort of that meant overall.
Are you on chart three? I mean, we don't discuss sort of payroll and...
oh, sorry. Well, whatever non-contract spending
right.
is.
So, well, it's primarily payroll, military and civilian, and since that's not data that we see in FPDS, this chart really is just more for sort of big picture purposes. But what we did try to note here, and that's the line at the top of this chart, is the share of contract spending or obligated dollars for contracts is a share of overall DoD spending, and that... the trend overall has been an upward one, except for in the last 3 years where we've seen sort of a slight downturn. And so all that's saying is that contract spending as a share of overall DoD spending is going down slightly, has been steady in the last 2 years, but that's not a comment on any sort of policies or spending trends on the payroll side.
I think it says in the text part of the report, non-contract defense spending increased by $71 billion, an increase from 36% of DoD acquisition outlays to 45%. And then it says that this steady relationship for DoD spending has not been seen since the years 95 to 2001.
I don't have the text in front of me.
Well, maybe it's not a big deal then.
No. How about we take that offline and come back to that? I'm sorry, I don't have the full answer there. Frank, please.
Much Frank Finelli with the Carlyle Group. Appreciate this is a great report. Appreciate all your work on it. Wonder if you could comment a little bit on the treatment of IDIQ contracts across whether it's product, services, or R&D. And then secondly, as you look at this data in a temporal sense, are you seeing any indications of better buying power guidelines having an impact?
Thank you. I'll let Greg speak to the IDIQ question and then get back to the better buying power.
So we've been looking at the IDIQ. The main thing we've been noting just is multi-award specifically has been one of the fastest growing. If you look at page 33, it's even in the past 3 years has had a 7% CAGR. FSS is also about 7%. But it's gone from about $3 billion in 1995 to being $57 billion now. And when the other categories, specifically single award IDCs, have been taking a hit as contract spending has been dropping, it's still been steadily growing. So that is one area of particular interest to us. We've also been looking at the question of number of contract officers to some extent, that some of these can be a little trickier to manage. They simplify some things, but they also require different sorts of management. And so now there are, generally speaking, fewer contracting officers to manage this number. whereas in the past you might see more purchase orders, more definitive as a percentage.
There's a follow-up. Are you getting task data on these IDIQs, or are you recording the ceilings as awarded?
The column we work in FPDS is the action obligated. FPDS, the unit of analysis is task orders. So in individual task orders, we have a certain number of contract actions, et cetera.
On the broader issue of bigger policies and whether or not we see them reflected in the trends, specifically better buying power, but we mentioned earlier the White House guidelines for more competition, more fixed price types of contracts. I think the bottom line from what the data show is that while there has been some effect of these guidelines and of these policies, it's really, really hard to move the needle when it comes to, you know, almost $400 billion worth of annual contract spending. And so much of the actual decision-making is undertaken at the contract officer level, and especially when it comes to some of the service contracts, you know, that are undertaken at the sometimes the base level. And so the movement is there. It's really, really slow. I think there is. We have seen more competition. We haven't seen more fixed price. Some of that is actually re-entering of data or changing of data entered in previous years, as we saw with fixed price. You know, the reductions in the combination and the unlabeled categories, and that's good. We applaud that. Data should be entered properly, and even if it means changing back years. But that's not necessarily indication of significant change driven by policy. Other questions? Let's take some from the web, please. Turn your mic on.
So we had one clarification request on small business awards. The exact distinction involving how many small businesses is both a matter of we reclassify from when a small company gets bought by a large company, as the Dun's number switches, and also the legislation on small business targets excludes directed orders, so Unicor. It also excludes overseas contracts. So the small business award goals aren't really concerned whether we're going to small businesses in Afghanistan. It's a U.S. target. And that's a question I have from web right now.
Okay.
And if any of our web viewers would also like to add in, again, gsanders@csis.org.
Just maybe a quick data point for that previous question. I think overall the Small Business Administration's target goal for small business set-asides in prime contracts is about 23%. For DOD overall, we see the number at about 16-17%. And that's our way of cutting the small business data. As Greg explained, it's different from the way DOD does that. Roger, please.
Okay, Roger Jordan with the Professional Services Council. On your competition chart, mm-hmm. while the number of non-competitive awards has gone up, the ratio seems to be relatively the same over time. In your conversations with the department, and I recognize you may not be able to speak for the department, but did they comment on that at all and highlight any of the challenges that they're encountering in sort of in increasing the number of competitive awards?
Discussions with them on this issue, and actually they like these numbers. I think they were about 2% higher than their own competition numbers, again, for reasons of methodology as opposed to actually reasons of differences in the way we analyze or understand the data. I think I can't say that there was a specific comment on whether or not the trend was a good or bad one that I can recall. I mean, and Mark, mind you, the people that we talk to are the people who collect and analyze the data, and not the people who are in charge of, you know, competition policy or contracting policy. And so you'd probably get a different answer there.
Tom,
please, in front.
Yeah, Jerry McGinn, Deloitte.
Sorry.
Question on the TRICARE. What is that? Page
management, yeah.
27. I don't know what slide number it is. Obviously, that's going up significantly. In your discussions with DOD, following on the last question, do you see that having a crowding out effect on other areas? Or, you know, it's hard to draw it from the data. I mean, other than, you know, it's one fixed pie, you know. Did that come up in your discussions? Because that, I would expect, is not going to go, that slope is not going to decrease or flatten out
right,
in time.
Right. It hasn't come up. I don't think, we haven't talked to anybody at TMA about this. That's something to follow up on for sure. I mean, overall dollars, like you said, it comes out of the bigger pie. And so if this is going up, other pieces have to give. It's still, I mean, at levels that are relatively small. I mean, $12 billion, it's hard to say that that's a small amount, but in the bigger sort of DOD context, that's not a huge percentage of the pie. But that's definitely something to follow up on and track, because there's no indication that that's going down. And we've seen very little, we've had very little insight into how these contracts are managed, how, you know, much workforce is allocated. Given that the growth has been so significant, do we see more, you know, contract officers there, or more attention paid to the characteristics that we've described, like competition, like funding mechanism, type of vehicle? That's something we can drill down into, actually. If that's of interest to you, we can cut just the TMA side of it and break it down by the characteristics that we've broken down for DOD overall.
If I might add, looking at specifically medical spending, which we haven't covered in detail in here, although it's included, it appears that the other DOD category, predominantly TMA, has been additive to medical. So we're seeing Army, Navy, Air Force at a fairly small percent presently, but a small percent that's, in absolute terms, the O2 value is about comparable to a 2011 value. So to the degree that there are other agencies doing medical contracting, it hasn't experienced a Iraq war, Afghan war boost, but hasn't gone away either. So if it's crowding out specifically in that category, it's crowding out the growth, not the baseline levels.
Tom, yes, please.
Am I remembering in the past, correctly, in the past, did you break these down into the different product service codes, equipment-related services, ICT? Is that data still available, or are you still breaking it down that way?
Yes, no, you're correct. We have a separate effort looking just at DOD service contracts, and that's where we do the breakdown into the, we have now six different service categories or areas that we look at. We use the same areas in our federal service contracting report that David mentioned earlier. That was sort of the grandfather report that drove us into this field to begin with. But so the if I'm remembering the six areas, there it's IT, it's R&D. We have we include as a service area because FPDS does that as well. It's professional administrative and management support services. We have equipment-related services, we have facilities-related services, and we have medical services. So those six categories, we have in a separate report that we have an interim report out actually now on DOD service contracts. The final report will probably be out by next month or early November at the latest. And then we'll also be doing an update of our federal service contracting report that covers all the federal agencies that report into FPDS. That'll happen probably later, towards the end of the calendar year.
And for our longstanding readers, the medical category is now included, and the construction category is now folded in with facility-related. Prior to our 2011 services report, we did not include those. We're focused on, you know, a smaller category of services. We're now covering all services. Right. And that holds for both DOD and our services report, DOD services.
No more questions. Great. Well, thank you, everybody, both here and online, for attending and participating. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks very much.